Please be advised, all music tracks used in this production are sole property of Kelsun Communications and are original compositions. Thank you.
Hey, it's Skiri Jones, executive producer of Elvis Duran and The Morning Show on Z100. I want to talk to you all about my friend and fellow Brooklyn College alumnus, Silas. Your e-journalist, social work advocate, Silas hosts and produces the award-winning Kelsun on the Air social work podcast. My friend and fellow BCR alum is now known nationally and internationally as Silas, your e-journalist, social work advocate. His podcast, it's also listed as one of the top social work podcasts you must follow. The award-winning Kelsun on the Air social work podcast.
To everyone tuning in, welcome. This is Silas, your e-journalism social work advocate. You're listening to the Kelsun on the Air Social Work Podcast, the program that promotes, celebrates, uplifts, and highlights the social work profession. This podcast aims to educate the general public to the vital contributions professional social workers make in every aspect of society, every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Silas, your e-journalism social work advocate, host of the award-winning Kelsun on the Air Social Work Podcast. And I'd like to take this time out to welcome you all to this special edition. And I have a very special guest with me today that I'm really excited about introducing and having her to share her story. She's a very well-known and published author, and it's my distinct pleasure to give you a little bit of information about Miss Dolores Cinquemani, well-known author. She holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Stony Brook University and a Master's of Science from Adelphi University. She has previously published three books of poetry, Unlaced in 2013, Timepiece 2015, and The Inner Eye in 2019. And then after her third book, she then wrote a book, and I guess she'll describe it as a memoir, but it's a really deep look into her experience with foster care and being disconnected. Really a lot of powerful stuff, and I thought it would be great for our audience, especially those from the social work profession and beyond, because this is a real big issue when it comes to child care, attachment theory, abandonment and neglect, how these things affect people throughout the course of their adult lives. So I'm really excited and honored to introduce to some and present to others our special guest for today, Ms. Dolores Cinquemani, published author. Ms. Cinquemani, welcome to Kelsun on the Air Social Work Podcast, and thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me and sharing my story. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Now, the book is called A Familiar Stranger, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. But in the beginning of the book, the quote from Jalal Gibran, "The most beautiful words on the lips of mankind is the word mother. And the most beautiful call is the call of my mother. It is a word full of hope and love, a sweet and kind word coming from the depths of the heart. The mother is everything. She is our consolation in sorrow, our hope in misery, and our strength in weakness. She is the source of love, mercy, sympathy, and forgiveness. He who loses a mother loses a pure soul who blesses and guards him or her constantly." Very profound quote. And I'm going to start out by just asking you, Ms. Cinquemani, what made you choose that to open up this chapter into your life?
Well, mother to me, the word mother has always been a very special word, and mostly because I never really knew my birth mother. I had been raised in a foster home with a wonderful, wonderful lady that was the only mother I ever knew, except for once I had met my mother at the age of 3. Hardly even remembered her, but did remember specific details about her legs, the color of her shoes, which were powder blue. And even at that young age, my crayons were blue. I always loved a blue color. So I always related to the fact that there was someone out there that was my mother. And through the years, I always had a sort of a shadow over me, when I watched other people, you know, and said, well, this is your mother, your, and how the resemblance physically of mothers, usually you have some resemblance to a mother. And yeah. I never felt I had that. So what, that was one of the reasons that I felt, not at that age, but I was always the type of person that journaled. And anything significant, even in those early ages, I would write down. It was sort of like a relief for me to write down what I thought, because I never really shared my thoughts with anyone. And so that's where it began. It began this person who's out there, did not know her, but knew that someone was out there. And that was my motivation. Not that I really knew it at that age. And it was only until I had my own children that I realized that I must search for this person, even for genetic information.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Now, so a lot of that kind of covered the first question. So the motivation for this book, there's a lot of different layers and it comes through in your writing. But you mentioned that, you know, you just had this strong desire to get to know who this person, this human being was that you came from, that you emanated from. So I know that was the desire you spoke to me about, the whole concept of why, but throughout the book, it just constantly comes through that, you know, you were driven to get to know this person. Tell our viewers and audience listeners a little bit about that drive and that determination.
Well, I think that, when a person thinks of who they are, the first person we think of, where did I come from? Who was my mother? Not so much, I never really worried too much about the other half, but I did always think of my mother, because I had known growing up that she had visited me, and at the age of three, she also knew where she left me. And it was only until much later, when I had my own children, I would look at them and say, how can anyone leave a child? And I didn't want to feel that I was being judgmental, because I'm not that kind of a person. But I would question myself, who is she? How could you leave a child? I would look at my own children, and I wanted an answer to that. And that was mostly part of my motivation at those, which at the time I was 20, 19, 20, 21, very young. So that was really part of the motivation, motivation.
Yes, absolutely. And like I said, it comes through. And part of that strong motivation is reflective in the title that you chose for this book. You called the name of the book for our listeners and viewers and our audience is called A Familiar Stranger. What is the significance of that title? Familiar and stranger are like the two opposites. So what is the significance of that?
Well, when I first met her, she was coming down a sidewalk on Fifth Avenue because I was waiting at the family hospital with my husband. We had set up a meeting, and I sort of recognized this person coming down the street, and I felt some pull toward her. However, she was not familiar to me at the time. It was only until she came into the room that I looked and I said, wow, I know this woman. Not that I really knew her, but I don't know what that was about. It could be just the fact that she was my mother. But I never really connected her physically until I saw her, because there was a resemblance between her and I. And she was to me a stranger. However, as a young mother, I knew that we were connected in more ways than one, but that side of it was missing. So she was a stranger to me. And at the time, I needed to understand who she was, but never felt close to her. Always felt that there was a side of her that was never revealed. And she was a complete stranger to me. So there were two sides. It was like somebody walking there, like, I know you, but I don't know
you. I don't know you.
Very, very confusing, and very, I was always in conflict, you know, when it came to her.
What was that first meeting like, the very first time? What was it like?
Well, it was very, I wouldn't say upsetting. She actually just looked, never really looked in my eyes or my face. And her comment was, oh, well, you're sort of pretty. You do maybe look a little bit like your father. But she went directly to my husband at the time, shook his hand, and directed all of her conversation to him. It was very strange, very unnerving. And then she immediately said, well, I want you to come and meet my mother, who was an older woman, my now new grandma, who lived in the city on 8th Avenue up in a tenement. And I told her, no, I didn't want to go. But she was very, very forceful. That's the first thing I recognized in her. Very, very forceful type of woman. And so we just sort of shrugged our shoulders because we knew we couldn't fight with her, and followed her, her to the tenement where we met my grandmother, which was another unnerving meeting. And you want me to tell you about that?
Yes, yes, because in the book you talk a little bit about that. And
well,
and it seems like there was almost like a sort of more comforting connection, if I picked up in the book, which when you met your grandmother as opposed to first time meeting your mother. So talk a little bit about that.
She, I don't know if I was comforted by her, but she was an older woman, immediately didn't speak English very well, but made herself known, you know. But she went into a very dramatic type of behavior, apologizing that what we did to you, I'm sorry, and I'm your grandma. And she went on and on and on, which upset me. She tried to hug me and grab me, but I felt nothing. Actually, I was very frightened. And my husband, who spoke a little bit Italian, because she did scream out, oh, she's a real drama queen. And he sort of shut her down. And we left. My mother never made a move to try to rescue me in any way, put her arm around me in any way. She was a very, at that time, now I think about it, simply detached. A very detached person. So that was not too good.
So the whole scenario, it seems, based on what you described, it was a lot of feeling of abandonment from both ends, the mother and the grandmother. And it must have been really, really traumatic for you. So as a little child, and then how did that affect you as you grew up?
Well, I was older when I met her. When I grew up, I always knew that I had a family somewhere. But I was a type of the child who was very chatty. I had lots of friends. I lived in a very secure home with my foster parents. There were other foster children there. And I never felt that I was different from anyone. She always made me feel loved, secure, and she sort of saved me. Because I don't know what would have happened to me. So I thank her for that, Mommy, wherever you are. Yeah, that was wonderful. So I was blessed.
Your foster mother, tell us a little bit about her. Because you talk about her in the book, a lot of love and affection.
I always felt that she was an angel in my life. Mm-hmm. That she was sent, and she was a good angel. I arrived at her home as a little girl. And I can remember, I described in the book that we came into a living room. You know, they had these rooms that were sort of like railroad rooms. They had their own home. They lived in Corona, Queens. It wasn't that we had our own bedroom. I had one bedroom until my sister came later on, about a year later. but she was a very kind, and her background was also that she came from a southern part of Italy, and her mother had died when she was a little girl. She had like five or six brothers and sisters. She was the youngest, and she was taken under her wing by her older siblings. And she was a very kind woman, a very giving woman. And she had other foster children before myself that lived with her and kept in touch with her forever. So she was just our mommy. That's who she was.
Yes,
and
yes.
Always and will be.
That very first page in the first chapter, you mentioned, she says, I'm your new mommy. How did that make you feel coming from upheaval?
I was a little girl and 3 years old, but sort of always a nosy little kid, you know. Not that I like to admit that, but I always sort of was driven by feelings. And when I met her, she was very, you know, loving, and her voice was soft. And she always had a habit of putting her hand on your shoulder. So you always felt like somebody was there. And it was very comforting. And I remember that as a little girl. I really do. So, you know, she was kind.
Okay. In the book, you talk about your foster sister, Frances. Tell our viewers and listeners about Frances.
Well, Frances was another type. She came, we had my bedroom alone until she came. And then in those days we had metal beds. They were like white metal single beds. So one afternoon, another bed was put in the bedroom and she arrived. She was at that time a year younger than me. And very, very, she was mischievous from day one. She would go in the closet and light matches. She would cut her hair. She would hide under the bed before we went to bed and scare me at night. So she didn't spare anything. So she was always in trouble, let's put it that way. But up until the time she passed away, which is about 5-6 years ago, she was always my sister. Even though I didn't agree with a lot of things that she did, I loved her family, and I still, you know, in contact with my nieces that are my nieces, I call. But she was different. She was always, as I said, always in trouble. She used to call me Goody Two Shoes. So, and I was afraid to be bad. And I wasn't the type, you know, I always followed rules, which now I don't follow rules so much, but I did at that time. But, you know, we learn.
You were very close with one of your aunts in the book. You talk about Catherine, and it was a really powerful part where you and her used to spend a lot of time together. Why doesn't Catherine answer me, guys? Why doesn't she take me to the park anymore?
She was a young woman. She wasn't related to me, but she was a young single woman that was the daughter of the barber that had a barber shop on our street.
Mr. Damiani?
Mr. Damiano, correct. God, I haven't mentioned his name in a long time. And he was also a rascal, teasing the girls and hitting them. But anyway, he had a single daughter, and she was a beautiful lady. Her name was Catherine. And in those days, if you weren't married by the time you were 28, 20, you were an old maid. So she was considered the old maid in the neighborhood. And she just bonded together at a very young age. And she would come knock on the door and take me for a walk. She was just a beautiful person. And I related to her in such a way that I felt like she was almost like a fictional mommy to me. And I had, you know, an imagination that I still have an imagination. But she came every in the summer, especially because she didn't work and there was no mother in the Mr. Damiano's wife had passed. So she was the oldest daughter and that was her role to take care of the family. And, but she was to me a very beautiful woman, very beautiful young woman at the time. And I loved her. And she came to call me, you know, in the summer. We'd go for a walk in the park, watch the birds. And we used to fish. And I don't know if you recall, in those days, we had a string with a straight pin that we turned and that would go into the pond. And we'd catch the fish. And she was just wonderful. And then just one day, she never returned. And I wondered, what did I do? Because I was mm-hmm. always like, oh, I must have been bad. I did something to her. She doesn't like me anymore. I was devastated. But it ended up that she was sick, and she passed away. Mm-hmm. And so the ladies in the neighborhood were all mommies to us. And they would say, well, the angels came and took her away. She was so beautiful that the angels came and took her away. And I was saying, why? Why did they take her away? My friend, I loved her, and I cried. It was very devastating for mm-hmm. me. And I remember very, very clearly at the funeral, I was a little girl, maybe six at the time, and the older people sort of, you know, protected me, and I was inside of their legs, and the funeral was going by at the time. They had like almost like a caisson with the big wheels, you know. It was an Italian neighborhood, so they were very dramatic at funerals. And here I am encased in these legs. And then this flower that someone had thrown had a blue ribbon on it, and it landed right inside my little cave inside the legs. And I always felt that that was her sending me a goodbye message. That's how much, you know, my imagination and how much I love. Mm-hmm. I feel sad right now just talking about it.
There was one sentence in the book when the older ladies in the neighborhood were telling you that the angels came and took her. You said, well, why did she go with them? Tell her I'll come back.
I was a little girl. I was a little girl, and it was like, if I didn't understand something, I didn't let it go. You know, it's like a dog with a bone. You know, why did they come and take her? Why? Like, I couldn't understand.
You know,
why
did she go?
Right. Why'd she go? Right, and you know, when you when you're young, you don't understand death.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But you understand the closeness that you feel to somebody.
The closeness, you know, the emotion, the feeling. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Which brings me to my next question. So you wrote this book, and it's full of emotion and feeling. What in your opinion was the motivation for you to write this book? Now you're a published author, you know, a lot of your works are out there because it's so profound.
Well, this book started way back. I always wrote notes. As I said, I always journaled. That mm-hmm. was my way of relieving tension and possibly not understanding certain things. So I would write what I thought I understood. Mm-hmm. So I started, and I never thought I would write a book. So I think during the pandemic, and that was the springboard, I said, oh my goodness, am I gonna stay inside all day? Cause I'm, you know, I'm a runner. I like to go out, I like to do things. And that whole year was like in front of me. So I found my boxes of notes and I started to put them together and write. And I don't know if, you know, we didn't have the pandemic, whether I would have ever finished it, but that whole year, and I think sort of sometimes things are just meant to be.
Yeah.
And there I was that whole year, and I put it all together and, you know, had some help with my, the man that set it up for me, Monk, Mr. Harris, and my grandchildren helped me a lot, and, you know, so I got it done. Cool. And, you know, as I said, I can't say thank God for the pandemic because that doesn't sound right. But for me, that time was time for me to do this. I think it was just time.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about it.
So growing up in foster care and, you know, being disconnected from your mother, tell our audience, what effect did your childhood experiences have on the way that you raised your children?
Well, I would never leave them. That's number one. Never, ever in a million years. I looked forward to having my own children, to raise them, but also teach them the values. I never really, they always knew that mommy was my foster mother, but I never went into any drama to tell them any stories. Actually, this book is sort of like a shock to them, but I did it, and I'm happy because it was sort of a catharsis for me. It's over. I wrote it and put all my feelings into it. And it's a story for somebody that's in the same situation. And there's plenty out there.
Yes, there are. Plenty, yes, there are.
Plenty of young people out there that, you know. So that's my story. And I'm just hoping that someone that reads it will feel better. And I call it my triumphant survival.
Yes, yes, I saw that in the copy that you so graciously autographed for me, and that really stood out a lot. And you kind of answered the question that I was going to ask next, which was, you know, what would you say of encouragement to anyone that's in foster care? And you just pretty much summed it up. There is someone. There's always going to be someone out there that will care. So can you sum that up before we go to our last point? And the last point I want you to emphasize after you talk about a little more about your message directly to anybody out there that's in foster care, that's been through foster care. And then I'm going to ask you to end by explaining the last sentence in the book. But there are a lot of children out there in foster care, and some of them had a great experience. A lot of them had not so great experience. What do you say to someone in foster care, the children?
Well, what I can think of is that you will always know that your family, that your caretakers are not your blood relatives. However, you must always believe in yourself, take from people the good things, and not dwell on the bad things. I have always, and even at this point in my life, I always say to myself, you know what? You might have a little problem, Dolores, but somebody has it worse than you. And that's what makes you move on. Because if you don't, you're going to sit there and, you know, be a bore. I call these people boring.
So, now,
that's my message.
Yes. Thank you for that. Last point. You ended the book with a painfully devastating quote from your mother. Why? And please share that very last sentence in the book, or that last scene in the book, because it's so powerful. So let's talk about that as we get ready to wrap up.
Well, it's exactly what she said. And when I wrote that last part, you know, being with my friend, that was a young woman, and we used to touch our hair up, and, you know, that was our routine. The kids were in school, and we laughed, and we had a glass of wine. And then she called, and she sort of broke the whole mindset. And it was almost like a person coming, speaking in a different language. Why she called me to say that, I have no, I can't speak for her. But being a mother at that time, a young woman, and I might have been in my 20s, for someone to say that to anyone, let alone your own child, that's a lot of pain coming from someone. And I sort of feel sad. I felt sad for her, because to be able to say that to someone is beyond anything I would ever think of doing. But that's where she was coming from.
Tell our audience exactly what, if you don't mind, exactly what she said, that very last sentence.
The last sentence? You want me to read the whole page or just read the last sentence?
Whatever you feel, we'll put it in context. Because I thought when I read the book, I was like, oh my goodness, what a profound way to end the book. But it was so much in there. So yeah, maybe just the last page, if you like.
All right. What she said during that whole time when she called, and I heard her voice, and I had been taught by my therapist to breathe, you know, to breathe, no exhale, but breathe in. And her last, I'll just read that. With a newfound strength, I smashed the phone back into its cradle, but not before I heard rushing toward me Rose's voice in a guttural roar. I tore your page out of my book a long time ago.
I mean, just for the person that brought you into this world to say that, that had to be heart-wrenching. So
very, but, very hard.
Yes,
very difficult.
You overcame. You survived. You went on to do a lot of great things. We've been talking with Ms. Dolores Cinquemani, well-known author. She holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Stony Brook University and a Master's of Science from Adelphi University, currently lives on Long Island, and she is the author of a very powerful and profound book, A Familiar Stranger. Ms. Cinquemani, where can viewers and listeners find the book if they'd like to purchase a copy?
On Amazon. It'll be on Amazon very shortly.
Okay. All right. In closing, I want to say that as a social worker, I really appreciate the fact that you came and you shared all of this with the audience. You know, being connected to the social work profession, there are a lot of people, in the Cinquemani that's going to benefit from this interview and the book. And we thank you so much for being gracious enough to share your story, because that's not an easy story to tell, but you tell it in the book so eloquently. And so I'm really honored to have gotten a chance to have you on the show. And so as we wrap up, to all our listeners, again, this is Kelson on the Air Social Work Podcast with Silas, your e-journalist and social work advocate. We've been having a very enlightening conversation with well-known author Ms. Dolores Cinquemani, author of the book that I want you all to go out and purchase and read. It's called A Familiar Stranger. Ms. Cinquemani, thank you so much for taking the time out to be a guest on the Kelson on the Air Social Work Podcast. We appreciate you so much.
And thank you very much.
This is Silas, your e-journalism social work advocate and host of the show. You've been listening to the Kelson on the Air Social Work Podcast. This and all other programs are available on the Apple iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor podcast platforms. Go to any search engine and type in Kelson on the Air in the search window to hear this show in its entirety. Thank you for tuning in. This has been a Kelson Communications production.